all glorious is Son of the Lord Jesus. All glorious is Son of the Lord Jesus. All glorious is Son of the Lord Jesus. All glorious to see Sigurungoraganitai Gor.
32. Om Aganatimanandasya Janajana Sanakaya Taksasimitanzaina Tasmai Sigurvenama. Sri Chaitanya Mahavishtam Stapita Vizena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sarpandanti. Vansa Kaupatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Pracha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaisavevyo Namo Namah. We've been reading the prayers of Queen Kunti. It's very, very special because she has somewhat of a tatastha position. Tatastha means that it is marginal in the sense that she knows of Krishna's very intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, and she has such an intimate relationship with Krishna, and she knows also about his power. She doesn't have any doubts about either Krishna's the possibilities of having an intimate relationship with him, nor does she have any doubt about that he's an ordinary person or something like that, because she knows him as the Supreme Lord. She knows him as unlimitedly powerful, inestimably powerful, and very strong also. He's unlimitedly powerful. What is unlimitedly powerful means? When you think of powerful, what do you think of? What do you think of when you think of powerful? Raise your hand. What? You raised your eyebrow. That was the old, better than anyone else did.
Powerful can be powerful, but with a certain cup.
Say that again.
Powerful can be in one field, but with a cup.
Okay, but what do you think of? Yeah, okay, so you think that it's... So powerful is powerful. It could be very powerful, extremely powerful. Give me an example of something that's very powerful, someone or...
The governor.
The governor, yes. Of which state?
The Queen of England.
The Queen of England, okay. Queen of England is powerful. And the governor of New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Yes.
Tim Cook.
Who?
Tim Cook.
Who's that?
The CEO of Apple.
Really? He's a worm.
He's a worm?
A worm and an apple.
Not exactly.
Oh, okay. He's a powerful human being. Why is he powerful?
Because he's a CEO of a company. Okay, but
so what does that mean? What his power is in that company, yes?
Yeah.
So what does CEO mean?
Chief Executive Officer?
Yes. So he is the boss of that company, and his power extends beyond that company in the sense that he has by his products he can influence the world. And also they're the largest taxpayer in the United States. Did you know that? And so there's some influence there, but there's a cap, a limit to his power. I mean, he can't control the ocean. There's a famous king in European history who commanded the ocean to stop its waves. And guess what happened? Nothing. I mean, not nothing happened. The ocean kept on its waving. So every powerful person, whether he's the governor, the Queen of England, the Queen of England's power is quite limited because it's mostly an official position. Who do you think is powerful? When you think of someone who's powerful, who do you think of?
Superheroes.
Who?
Superheroes. Fake people?
How could a fake person be powerful?
Because they're powerful in their own world.
But do they have existence?
No.
So how could something that doesn't have the power to exist have any other power? No. But okay, because you get... Because who are they? What do you call them?
Superheroes.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. Now, who's your favorite superhero? Spider-Man?
Yeah, let's go that.
Yeah, okay. You know what he going to be in his next life? You know what he's going to be? Spider, maybe, because he's thinking, oh, spider, so good. But in any case, he's limited. He's limited. Everyone in this world is limited. But the creator of this world and the one who maintains this world, because if we think about it, not only is the creator important and it takes power, but to maintain something is even more difficult. It's even more difficult to maintain something. You need so much energy to maintain something. And then, in some ways, the more easy one is the destruction of something, but still it takes energy. But Krishna has that. Mama Angso Teja Sambhava, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that he, through just a little Angso Teja, a little bit of his power, he maintains and supports this universe. Now, what's an example of something, or just something that we take for granted in the universe that needs maintenance, that we don't think of, but it actually requires maintenance? Yes.
Breathing,
yes, because if we had to think about breathing as we brought up, or our heart beating, or even our eyes blinking, because without the eyes blinking, we wouldn't be able to, our eyes would stop their ability to function, or the digestion of food. Yes.
I was going to say digestion.
You were going to say that, okay? Digestion of food, and I was thinking of, like, the oceans. I've heard Prabhupada, as he was walking by the ocean, because the ocean only comes up to a particular point generally. So Prabhupada explained, it's because Krishna commands the ocean. You can't go past this point, that the ocean doesn't go past this point. The tides move a little bit, but the ocean is so powerful. When there's a tsunami, thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people can be killed. Or the earth quaking or exploding, or in a volcano. There's active volcanoes in Hawaii, for example, and there's people who live in towns and villages nearby, and they know that if the volcano erupts or the lava flows, it will destroy their whole life, their whole village, their house and everything. And they've come to live with that. And they say, they talk about a higher power, the goddess who's in control of, I can't remember her name, this particular one, volcano. They talk about her as, if she wants, she can take a whole house and there's nothing anyone could do about it. Okay. But that's just a little power, one volcano. But how about maintaining the orbits of the planets or the combustion of the sun? What does it take to maintain that? No one really has any idea. So the scientists talk about this. There's weak gravitational forces and strong gravitational forces. But where are these forces? Who is the creator of these things? Do they all come from nothing? Do you think things come from nothing? Have you ever seen anything come from nothing? Have you ever seen something come from something? What have you seen something coming from something? I know, let me guess what you're thinking. Money coming from an ATM. That's what I was thinking that you were thinking. No. What's an example of something coming from something?
A book coming from a library.
Yes, good. And what's an example of something coming from nothing? Let me ask you a question. You said a book coming from the library, but where?
I don't know.
No, it's a good one. It's a good one. But how did the thought book coming from library come from didn't come from nothing? Because if you didn't know what a book was and you didn't know what a library was, then even the mental book couldn't come from the mental library.
I don't know.
But it just comes.
Yeah.
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 So how does it just come? We don't know. How does memory work? That's a whole other subject. But in the Bhagavad Gita it says, Savasya Chaham Riddhe Sanavit Matta Smitam Gyanam. Sometimes memory works and sometimes it doesn't work. Like during exams. It sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't work. So in any case, every power that we have is contingent or dependent on something else. Everything we do is dependent on something else. Our life is dependent on breathing and the heart beating and so many things, on the shelter of our house and the food. that we have, and the food is dependent on what? What is the sun and what else?
Ingredients.
Huh?
Ingredients.
Where do the ingredients come from?
The ground.
Okay.
Or trees.
Or trees, and where does the ground come from? Yeah, so everything is coming from something else. Where does the earth come from?
Space.
Space. And what's space?
Something.
Something, yes. I'm glad you didn't say nothing. Because then we would say that how could something come from nothing? But in any case, when you go back very, very, very far, completely far, to the very, very beginning, the cause of all causes, that cause of all causes, that's the definition of what Krishna is, or the Param Ishwara is. He causes everything, sarva karana karanam, but he himself has no cause. The cause of all causes, but he himself has no cause. So that cause of all causes, who's unlimitedly powerful, Kunti Devi is saying, is standing right in front of her, Krishna, and he's very, very beautiful. And he's going to leave to go to Dwarka. She's in Hastinapur, because the battle has been won and the Pandavas have been placed as the rulers. And now he's going to leave. And she's trying to understand who this person is. He's even accepted the position of her nephew. So she has an intimate relationship with him, family relationship with him. But yet he's all powerful. And he has no cause, but yet he accepts the position as the son of Devakim Vasudev. He accepts that position, but yet he's never born. So it's something that's inconceivable. He takes his birth, but he's unborn. So we won't discuss how the unborn takes his birth at this point, but we'll just talk about why the all-powerful would take his birth, who's unborn. Why would he take his birth? And because he's all-powerful, that means that nothing can force him to do anything. Like, for example, some of us go to work and some of us go to school. Now, we'll start with an easy one. Why do you go to school?
Because I have to.
Okay, why do you have to? That means there's a force being applied to you.
To learn new stuff.
Okay. But that's, do you go to school to learn new stuff? Or do you go to school to, because someone says you have to go to school, because every time I ask you, you complain. Oh, tomorrow I have to go to school. So you have to go to school. So why do you have to go to school?
To learn stuff.
Okay, but are you going because you want to?
Nope.
No. Okay, so why are you going to school?
Because I'm forced to.
But who's forcing you?
No one.
How could something, a force, come from no one, which is nothing?
I don't know.
You don't know who's forcing you? I know who's forcing you. I know two people who are forcing you, in fact. Huh? Yeah, that's one way to do it. You can make a scientific experiment and say, tomorrow I'm not going to school, but don't do it on Sunday.
Okay.
On Monday, I'm not going to school tomorrow. Then you'll see, that way you'll find out who's forcing you. That's what my idea is saying. This is science. It's provable.
I tested it lots of times, you know.
Yes. And what was the result?
Yeah, I'll just keep doing it.
You'll keep doing it? But you have to go to school? Okay, let's go on. Okay. You try it on Monday and let's see what happens. Do you have to go to school?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a force making you go to school. And that force is, you know what the word benevolent means?
I think so. I don't know.
Do you know what the word benevolent means?
No.
What does the word benevolent mean?
Good intention.
With all good intention, it's for your welfare. But because people love you, they push you so you can go to school, so you learn things, so you'll be able to do something useful in your life. So Krishna already knows everything. And we could ask the adults, why do they have to work? They have to go to work. Or what's forcing them to go to work? A need. And what's the need?
Money.
Paisa.
Paisa.
That means money. money, because you need to feed their beloved family members and provide shelter for them, etc. But Krishna already knows everything. He's Sarvajna, and he has all wealth, Sat Aishwarya Purnam, and he's all powerful. So what forces him to come? When there is no one more powerful than him, what forces him to take birth? We take birth, we suddenly pop, there we are. We're in this world, but we're forced, we're pushed, we don't have any real choice about where we're born, what our body is like. So what is it that causes Krishna to take his birth? So there are reasons. Kunti Devi is saying some reasons. The first two that she said are in this verse. Punya Sloka Kirtaye, to please Punya Sloka, his dear devotee, King Yudhisthira, and Yado Priyasyanu Vavaye, to glorify King Yadu, who is a great devotee. So he's taken his birth in his family because the family of a great person becomes glorified by people. So the Yadu dynasty becomes glorified by Krishna's having taken his birth in it. So two reasons have been given. What is one of them? Yes.
To glorify the Yadu dynasty?
Yes, the king. Because by taking his birth in that family, the king of the Yadus too. And the other one, glorified King Yudhisthira. Were you going to say that? Yes. And what was the name of king that he's called in this verse, the Sanskrit?
Punyasloka.
Yes, yes. Kirtaye, to glorify him. So there are different reasons. So in text 33, we're going to hear another reason. There it is. Apare Vasudevasya.
Apare Vasudevasya.
So here, she's giving different opinions. And then finally, in this section, in a few more verses, she'll tell you what the real reason why Krishna comes, even though he does come for this reason. Sometimes, it's like you go to school to learn.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one reason. But sometimes there's deeper reasons why you go, because you have to. And it's actually against the law in Australia to not go to school. Did you know that? Yeah. So there's many reasons. So when we do something, it's not just one reason, but there's generally a deepest reason why we do things. So Krishna's going to reveal, Kunti Devi is going to reveal at the end the deepest reason why we do something. You know, it's very interesting that in the spiritual world, there are so many things that go on. There's in Goloka Vrindavan, it's called Goloka. Why is it called Goloka? Because of the cows. It's the planet of the cows, the place of the cows. And there, in that very, very, very peaceful land with its pasturing grounds and everyone is taking care of the cows, the residents of Vrindavan take care of the cows. It's not the dairy industry, but rather they take care of the cows because they actually love the cows. And they take care of the cows. They consider the cows like their family members, practically speaking. And because the cows are loved and protected, Krishigoraksha Vanijam, Vaishakama Swabhavajam, because they're loved, they give so much more milk. And the earth, too, isn't just exploited as a agribusiness. It's treated with respect because they even call Earth Bhumi Mata, Mother Earth. So it's a whole different mentality that's sustainable, contemporary thinking. But it's also very, very sweet because there's a reciprocation with everything. So when the cows are given affection, they give so much more milk. And their milk is actually meant for their calves primarily. And they have so much love for their calves. And that milk is a transformation of their love, of their affection. And you can see this in Vrindavan. If you go to a dairy farm, when the cows are there, they have these machines that they hook up to the
utters, and then they turn on the machine, and the machine just sucks the milk out of the cows. It's a different quality of milk. When in Vrindavan you see it, it becomes something completely different. When the calves come, they always bring the calves first, because the calves come, and then the cow starts licking them, have so much affection, and then drops the milk. And then the calves drink some milk, because they can't drink all the milk that the cow has, because the cow, by the arrangement of Krishna, gives more milk than a calf can drink. And if the calf drinks all the milk, that the calf is greedy for milk, but if he drinks all the milk, then the calf actually becomes sick. So the calf drinks some milk, and then they'll tie the calf up. Has anyone ever seen this? Yeah. Then they tie the calf up so the cow can see the calf, and then the keeper of the cow milks the cow. And when a calf is taken away from the cow, the mother cow will cry. So this system of and it's actually quite scientifically amazing if you think about it. And you could say amazing because this is how Krishna takes care of people. Because cows eat
grass.
Do you eat grass?
No.
No, that's good. Okay, cows eat grass, and then they in their body they turn grass to milk. And do you eat milk? Drink milk?
Yeah.
So something, by the miracle of doing that, and one time I heard a morning walk with Prabhupada, someone told Prabhupada, now they're making milk out of coconuts or something like that. And you can actually, they have this here. And Prabhupada said, does it taste like milk? I said, no. It doesn't taste like milk. It doesn't have the nutrition of milk. But Krishna's arrangement is so wonderful that you can, practically speaking, you can live just on milk alone if there was nothing else. So everything so far that we've heard why Krishna would come, it's got to do with two reasons given. And here's the apare vasudevasya. Others say apare vasudevasya of Vasudev, devakyam, of Devaki. Devakyam yachito abhagat abhyagat. Devakyam yachito abhyagat. That others say that because of Vasudev and Devaki, yachito means their prayers, because they in a previous life as Prishni and Sutapa, they were great devotees and they wanted Krishna as their son. So you have taken their birth as their son because they are so fortunate. They wanted that fortune to have you, the Supreme Lord, as their son. And because they were great devotees, just to satisfy them, some people say that you appeared as their son. So for Yadu to glorify King Yudhisthira, and now they're saying because just to please your devotees, Devaki and Vasudev. So so what we're hearing now is the reason why Krishna is coming, why the unborn takes his birth, the all-powerful takes his birth, is because out of love and affection for his devotees. So this is a very important point, that although he's all-powerful, he loves to please his devotee. He's a person, relationship, and therefore the conclusion is that that bhakti, devotion to Krishna, who is all powerful, is it on a certain level it controls Krishna. And it's completely natural amongst people that when there's a loving relationship, then the other person naturally just wants to please. When there's no love, it's just mechanical. But love brings so much pleasure to the heart, and when the heart is pleased, then it opens up and wants to give. The open, loving heart wants to give. The heart that's empty and has no love in it just wants to take. And that defines the material world, practically speaking. Everyone is dissatisfied, and because they're dissatisfied,
Their hearts are tight and closed, and therefore they want to take. And no matter how much they take, they're not satisfied. Because there's people who, they have millions of dollars, and not only millions of dollars, there's people who have billions of dollars. And not only that, there's, I just happened to notice that they were, they're cutting something from the old age pensioners because they have to balance the bucket. The budget. So, but at the same time, immediately, the politicians gave themselves a 10% raise. So is that going to be enough to satisfy them? How much does it take to satisfy a person? How much finance does it take? There's so many stories about these kind of things, but one can't be satisfied by taking. One becomes more satisfied by giving, and one gives when one is feeling it's natural to give. Like the cow gives when the affection of the calf is placed before. And how do you say calf in Hindi?
Bachara.
Something like that. And in Sanskrit?
Vatsa.
And sometimes Mother Yashoda would call Krishna, "Oh, Vatsa, oh, my little calf." With such sweet affection. So, some say that apare vasudevasya devakyam yachito abhyagat. They were so fortunate. They took birth. Abhagyat means took birth. And they were to make them so fortunate. But undoubtedly, ajas tvam asya che maya, that ajas tvam, the unborn, you have come. Che maya means for the good of the world. But what is the good of the world in this one? Che maya means the good of the world. That when Krishna comes, it's for the good of the world, not to take something from the world, but for the good of the world. So not only King Yadu he wants to please, and Vasudev Devaki wants to please, and Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to please, but he also wants to help the people of this world. And how is he going to help the people of the world? So what word means doing good for the world?
Chaimaya.
Huh?
Chaimaya.
Are you studying Sanskrit? Yeah. Why? You'd be a good Sanskrit scholar, I bet. In addition to... Are you doing well in school?
Yes, good. I
guess so. Good. I bet you would do very well, a very good Sanskrit scholar. So what is the good that he's going to do for the world? There are many goods for the world. But this is, again, he's talking about others' opinions. She's talking about others' opinion. Vadhaya cha suradusham. Vadhaya means for killing. Sora duisham, those who are envious. Duisha means envious of the suras, of the devatas, of the demigods. And he's going to kill them. And it's like, so we think a god comes to kill, he's only supposed to do good. But sometimes killing or removing people is good. Just like if there are criminals for stealing and causing mischief in the world, to remove them and put them in prison is good. Because maybe they'll learn something, that we shouldn't act like this anymore. So Krishna, yada yada hidamasya, glanir bhavati bharata, bhutanam adamasya, tatatmanam shijamyam. That he comes also to remove the miscreants, to protect the devotees and to remove the miscreants. Miscreants is an old-fashioned word that means those who are cruel-hearted and cause harm to others. And this is one of the main functions of government, is to protect the honest citizens from the dishonest and the thieves. But it describes also in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam that in Kali Yuga, more and more, that the government becomes the thieves, the greatest thieves. So if the government's supposed to protect the thieves, and if they themselves become thieves, if the government's supposed to protect the citizens from the thieves, and if they themselves become thieves, then who protects the citizens? And the citizens are always in anxiety then. So here is Srila Prabhupada's translation of this verse. Please, who will read it? Okay.
Yeah.
You read this one, you read the next one, loudly and clearly.
Others say that since birth, Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you. You have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and kill those who are envious of the demigods.
Yes. So here is Srila Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. Now, as soon as I read this, I'm going to ask you what you remember. Very short, only a few sentences, only two sentences, I think. It is also said that Vasudeva and Devaki, in their previous birth as Sutapa and Prisni, underwent a severe type of penance to get their Lord as their son. And as a result of such austerities, the Lord appeared as their son. It is already declared in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord appears for the welfare of all the people of the world and to vanquish the asuras, or the materialistic atheists. Interesting how they underwent severe penances and austerities to get their Lord as their son. Because it's a fact that to do anything in this world, it takes austerity. What do we mean by austerity? It means putting what is pleasurable aside to gain something else. So nowadays people don't like austerity. But yet everyone has to perform austerity. One can say that to get knowledge, to learn, you have to perform the austerity of going to school. Nothing just come, like knowledge just doesn't drop into your brain from the sky. You have to perform austerity. You have to study. And if you want money to come, you have to work to get it. It's not that the work exactly causes the money, because there are so many people who work and remain poverty-stricken, but still these austerities are required to get any result in this world. What to speak of a spiritual result? Devaki, Vasudeva, they underwent severe austerities. They wanted Krishna as their son. So much. They underwent such deep austerities. They gave up all, anything that was selfish, any sense, petty sense gratification. They just didn't, they didn't even want that. They did, because their desire to have Krishna as their son was so overwhelming for them and so deep, it made every other desire seem not at all worthwhile. Because everyone has a desire. We want this, we want that, we want this, we want that, we want this. But if one really has a big desire, I really want this thing, then the little desires get pushed away. So similarly, it is said, Tatra loyam api mula mekalam. If one wants Krishna, to be with Krishna, there is one price and one price only to be with Krishna, and that is tatra loyam. That means one has to be very greedy for it. Just like there's so many people who are greedy for money, and they just think about money all day long and how to get money, how to get this and how to get that and how to get that and manipulate this. So there are others, they are called saintly persons, that they have so much desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna, that every other desire they have appears useless and insignificant. They don't even think about it. So this, to have that kind of desire, to have even the seed of that desire, like a great saint, a great holy person, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who demonstrated by his personal life what it's like to be in that mood of all I want is to be with Krishna. And practically speaking, after he took initiation from Sripada Iswara Puri, no other words would come from his mouth other than, where is Krishna, Chandra? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Can you help me find Krishna? Can you help me find Krishna? I want to find Krishna. This is actually, he taught how to be a devotee in that way. Because there's a process of developing our desire, because it describes in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that in the opening verses, raise your hand if you've read the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, I also have read it. You also have read it. Have you read it? Why? You should go to your school and say we want a course that demands us to read the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And you tell them that Purisha told you that they should have that in their school. Okay?
But he's not going to school anymore.
For this yoga, he'll really start going to school and be so eager. Because it describes that there is a tree, a swata tree, that has its... Now try to see a picture of this. That has its branches up and its roots down. A tree that has its branches up and its roots down. Have you ever seen a tree with its branches up and its roots down?
Yeah. Yes.
Where?
Everywhere.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. I got it. Sorry. Yes, you're right. I was just seeing if you were listening. And I found that I wasn't listening. Okay, have you ever seen a tree with its roots upwards and its branches down, as described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita?
No.
Okay. Have you?
No.
Have you? Well, there is a place where you can see a tree. And there's one place that's not even far from here. In Whiteman Park, there's a lake, a small pond. And if you look in that pond, you'll see a tree, or many trees, with their roots upward and their branches down. Where? You can explain this?
The reflection?
Yes, in the reflection, in the water. So the tree with its roots up and its branches down is a reflection of the real tree. And everything in the reflection is opposite of reality. So this is compared to the material world, this world, and the spiritual world. This world is a reflection of the spiritual world. It's upside down, actually. So here's the question. On what, according to the Bhagavad Gita, like the reflection of the tree, what does it rest on? What does it sit on? Not sit, really, but what is it on?
Water.
So what is, this? I'll give you the hard part of this one, what does the reflection of the material world rest on? Desire. Now this is such an important point. Our situation on the tree of the material world, on the whole tree itself, rests on our desires. And similarly, our situation, whether we're in a good position in the material world or in the spiritual world, it also rests in our desires. So the great saint, they do whatever is required to increase their desire to be with Krishna in the spiritual world. And they desire to have that desire so strongly, they don't care about the pains and pleasures and the this and the petty things. They don't care so much about the material world because they understand themselves as eternal, and they know that material pleasures come and go. They come and they go, and just like we don't want misery and difficulties, but difficulties come. You don't have to like pray for difficulties. It just like comes. And happiness also comes, because it's the nature of the material world, our fate, our karma. So they don't, the saintly persons, or one can even say the intelligent person, or the person who's using his human life properly, he may have material desires, but he doesn't make the satisfaction of his material desires his whole life, his everything. Because just imagine what it's going to be like if don't imagine it too deeply, but just in a simple way. Say if you make your whole life, like you see these people sometimes here, that once a year they have, on a Sunday, they have an old car festival I don't know, what do they call it?
Classic cars.
Classic cars in Whiteman Park right here. So like tens and tens and tens and tens of people come with their old cars. And they're all polished and they're like new and they look so funny and old, and so many people come to see that. Now if you make cars, having old cars, the whole, that's the strongest desire in your life, the thing that you get pleasure from, then what's going to happen when it's time for you to leave this world? And it happens to everyone. Even if you own 10 old cars, it's going to happen. Or even 12 old cars, it will happen to you one day. Or even 15 old cars. What's going to happen? You're attached to these old cars. First of all, they're not going to help you. You can't get in. Can't get in them and drive away from death. There's an old story that this one man was working in the fields. His boss had told him to work in the fields, and suddenly, as he's working in the fields, he saw death, right in front of him, who looked at him. He looked at the person in the field like this. And the person in the field was so frightened that he went to his boss and said, "I have to leave immediately." "Where are you going? Where are you going to go?" "I have to leave immediately. I want to borrow your horse. I have to take your horse. I got to get out of here immediately." "Where are you going to go with my horse if I give him to you?" "I'm going to go to Delhi." That's in India. Because they're in the field somewhere. "I will go to Delhi and run away as fast as I can." So he said, "Okay, you've worked very hard and you look so frightened and you're terrified." So he gave him his horse and he got on the horse and went as fast as possible. This was in the morning to Delhi, towards Delhi. So the man was trying to figure out, the boss was trying to figure out, why is he, what happened? So he went into the field and he saw death there. So he said, but it didn't look very frightening to him. So he said, "You're deaf, yes, yes. Why did you frighten my worker like that?" And he said, "I wasn't trying to frighten him. I was just so surprised to see him in your field." "Why?" "Because I have an appointment with him this evening in Delhi. And I was wondering what he was doing here." We can laugh at it, except if it's for us, because so it happens to everyone, and it's unavoidable. And what happens if our whole life is collecting cars or houses or something, and then it's our time to come? What are we going to do? First of all, we'll be terrified, and second of all, we'll be lamenting, and third of all, we're so attached to it, we're going to be in so much anxiety because we can't leave it behind. So therefore, the intelligent person doesn't put all his energy into capturing things that he's going to lose and leave behind that are going to cause him great misery. And even though he may have desires, material desires, he doesn't live his life as if those desires are everything. He's not that foolish. It's an intelligent person. So he tries to live his life in such a way that he increases his spiritual desire. He increases his spiritual desire. And that's what the last verse in this section is going to say, why Krishna comes. He comes, and I'll tell you what it is now, but we'll still read it next time or in a few days. He comes to perform pastimes, activities. And these activities have such a sweetness in them. They have such a sweetness to them. And there's so much knowledge in them. But especially they have a sweetness to them that increases our desire to be with Krishna, which is the most valuable of all things. So Vasudeva and Devaki underwent such hard, difficult austerities because they wanted to please Krishna. So one may say, why will doing difficult things please Krishna? And the answer is, they don't exactly please Krishna. Like if you sit on nails or something like that, and it's so difficult and so painful. Does Krishna somehow get happy that you're suffering so much? No. It's not those kind of austerities. But it's not dealing with the material, superficial pleasures of life and not getting pleasure from that, because usually we do those things just to distract us. You know, as soon as you come into a common home, I know people that immediately they turn on the television just so they don't have to think, practically speaking, just so they're distracted after such a terrible day working for a boss. So they just turn on the television and they open up the refrigerator or something. Do you do that when you come home from school? No. But you eat your nectarine in the middle of the day. Sometimes. But just not to forget what's important to us, but the austerities are to minimize the superficial, the material, the mundane, even the physical needs, because of the increase of the deep, deep desire to be with Krishna. That Krishna, it's like a statement, I want to be with you so much that these things are superficial for me, I don't care about them. What's really important to me is that this burning desire I have in my heart to be with you, because that's love, and it's selfless. And it's not to want to be with Krishna so that I could be even free from material difficulty, because they're willing to tolerate all material difficulty for Krishna's pleasure, because their thoughts, these kind of saintly persons, their thoughts are on what is pleasing to Krishna, how can I please Krishna? What is pleasing? That is the way a devotee thinks. Maybe even a baby devotee, and then there's a very, very saintly devotee. But even the baby devotee starts thinking, let me do something for Krishna's pleasure. Because everyone's thinking, what about me? What about me? What about me? I'm not getting enough. I'm not getting enough of this. I'm not getting enough of this. I want more. I already have $100 million and I need 100. Like the professional basketball players, and the best professional basketball players in the United States, they get something like over $135 million a year. And that's a lot of paisa. Yeah? Yeah, they're the best, though, and they underwent great austerities. They practiced like anything, and then they were suitable for it, and they practiced and practiced. They underwent their austerities, but it's not satisfying. Because they always are manipulating to get more. So how much more would it take to satisfy? How much does it take? How many houses? How many cars? I never met the person, but there was one very wealthy family in Bombay that they were devotees, very, very pious Gujarati family. And they had, like, the Gurukul students used to go visit them every summer in Bombay. And he would take them to his house, and underneath the house there was a garage, and in the garage he had over 50 Rolls Royces. Over 50 Rolls Royces. And how many can you drive at once after all? But he was collecting them. I guess it was a good investment, what can you say? But the nature of material things is that if you develop an attachment for these things, and you will get attachment for it if they give you pleasure, whatever we get pleasure from, we get attached to. But then you have to leave them behind. And then if your heart is full of there's no room left for eternal benefit, for developing love for Krishna and desiring that. So the final verse in this section, talking about why does Krishna come, he comes to perform his very sweet pastimes, so that by hearing about them, that we become attracted to Krishna, because his pastimes are very sweet and very... And just by touching them with our ears, with our consciousness, we get a pleasure of a different kind of pleasure, and that pleasure brings satisfaction to the heart. Okay, so next time we'll read 34 more reasons why Krishna came, and then the one after that, 35, will be the one I just told you in advance. Okay, thank you. Now it's 8. is, if there are any questions, some simple few minutes worth, if there's any questions. So that's Krishna. It's so interesting. This is, because Krishna doesn't stay in this world in his personal form, except in the deities. That's his mercy also. The Archa Vigraha, the deities, his mercy. But he comes in the form of the holy names. The holy names are so nice that at any time of the day or the night, if you want to be with Krishna, you can just chant his holy name. And Krishna Gata, it's so nice hearing about Krishna. So Krishna specifically comes to perform pastimes so that we have something to talk about other than the daily news. What happened today in the news, do you know? Do you know what happened today? Do you know what happened today? Huh?
I don't watch the news
either. That's why I'm asking if what happened today. Maybe you could tell me. No. But.
Oh, yeah, I'm the summer.
Oh, is it good news?
Yes.
Really? What channel are you watching? Because usually all the news is bad news.
It's just.
If you want to become miserable, watch the news.
I don't watch it. I just know.
Yeah, I was just making some statements about life. Okay, tell me some news. And you're promising it's good news.
Yeah,
okay.
It's good. Yeah. For me, it is.
Okay.
You know the NBA, the basketball league in America?
NBA?
Yeah. The Cavs made the final, Cavaliers. They made the finals, so. That's good news.
You're obviously a Cavs fan.
Yeah.
That's
good news.
Yeah. It's good news.
Well, it is.
It is.
But then it's bad news for the other team.
Yeah. That's the nature of the material world. Very good. Preach to your brother. Go ahead. Continue.
I mean,
somebody's laughing and someone's overjoyed and the other person is crying.
I said it was good news for me.
So. Yeah, yeah. Now we all have to pray that they win the ultimate. Yeah. Why is it good news for you?
Because I support the Cavs. And I can,
Do you get anything out of it?
What? My friends go for the other team, and so
they'll be crying.
Yeah.
So you'll be happy. Okay, now I understand everything. Okay. See, there's different level of desires, and not that you don't know these things, but there's different level of desires, and different level of good news also. So. Another way to think of good news is that I didn't get hit by a car today. So the absence of bad news is also good news in the material world. And then there's the good news when your team wins. But then, and then you're happy. And then if your team, we don't hope your team loses or anything, but sometimes they do, and then you'll be crying. And then your friend who is sad because your team won will be happy because your team lost. And then
you didn't lose.
Huh? If, I'm just saying if. But I'm saying there's different levels of good news and there's different levels of happiness. And there's a happiness available that from the spiritual level that make any material happiness, even if they win the whole world championship, that makes that appear insignificant. Another way to look at it is if you took the happiness that you would get if they won the whole thing and multiply it by a billion, something like that. But anyway, I asked you a question and you very honestly and nicely answered me, and your brother preached to you nicely. So it was a good time. Okay, what could anyone say after that? So we will end our class here. But even you know that's not the highest happiness, right?
I'm just saying some news.
Yeah. No. I was just a little bit teasing you.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a Caps fan.
You?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Hare Krishna.